conspiracy theories and the people who believe in them have become a bit of a source of fascination, particularly over the last couple of years. It's really easy to dismiss the people who end up in these worlds, but journalist Hayden Donnell decided not to do that. Instead, he tried to find out more about them and the way their brains are working, maybe the way their hearts are working. He's written a pretty powerful piece for the latest issue of New Zealand Geographic, where he meets people on their own terms and tries to understand how they've ended up where they are. Hayden also works for RNZ's Media Watch, by the way, and he's with me in the Auckland studio. Hi.
Kia ora.
Yeah, it's interesting reading your piece because you would introduce us to somebody who was a conspiracy theorist. You'd explain how they got into that theory, and then I kind of waited for the moment where you said, but then they realised it was all stupid and they came back to their senses. But in fact, as I said, you talked to them on their own terms, and you weren't just talking to people who were reformed, you talked to people who were in the midst of it.
The main character, Hannah McGowan, she is reformed. She was an anti-vaxxer. She now has vaccinated her children. So there was a couple of people that I think have reformed. I also talked to Sue Gray, who's very prominent in that anti-vax, anti-5G world, and she hasn't reformed. But, I mean, I just tried to find commonalities between some of these people, some of the things that motivated them and some of the things that drew them into these worlds, and actually tried to point out that maybe they aren't so different in some of their ways of thinking to some of us who believe ourselves to be more perfectly rational and have all of our beliefs grounded in science and fact.
They're not stupid people.
No, especially if you talk to Hannah, she's very eloquent and she will talk about philosophers and various scientific theories. I'd say she's smarter than me. And so I looked at some of the factors that drew her into the anti-vax world, and it was kind of like peeling back the layers of an onion. First of all, she has a debilitating health condition, Crohn's disease, and that was misdiagnosed and dismissed often by male doctors for a really long time. And then when it was finally diagnosed, she had emergency surgery and then almost died. And then after that, she was prescribed drugs that basically, there wasn't a duty of care taken by the medical profession into seeing what side effects she was experiencing, and it meant that she had more health problems as a result. And so this is a common story for a lot of women. I mean, not hers in particular, but women are prescribed lower strength painkillers. They often have their pain dismissed. There's conditions like endometriosis that is just poorly researched. They have bad experiences of medicalization. And of course, when Hannah had this bad experience in the medical system and she went into the alternative health system, she found a more welcoming, open-minded community, one that seemed to care about her. And so that drew her into a set of beliefs that are not mainstream. And all of us, whether we know it or not, have a similar processes going on. We have social. All of our beliefs are formed when you look at the research, all of our beliefs are formed socially. They're impacted by our peer group, who we associate with and who we like and who we dislike. Mm-hmm. That's not an unusual thing. So that's just one example of this not being a totally unusual.
Yeah. This is a really overused word in 2021, but does privilege play a part here?
Yes.
It's part of the reason that we find it so hard to understand conspiracy theorists, because we, and I'm using the term, I guess, as a white middle-class guy who's had a pretty good life, I trust the government and I trust the health system because it's always treated me pretty well. I trust the justice system. If I appear before a judge, I probably will be treated fairly and will come with no preconceptions. But when you've grown up, as you point out in your article, some Māori people have grown up with horrific experiences of state care, for example, or the gender example that you use, the experience that women have in the health system. So when you understand that other people don't get the same treatment from the institutions, is it easier to understand why they might not trust those institutions?
Yeah, so for me, for example, a Pākehā middle-class guy, my priors are going to be different, right? I'm probably going to trust the government because the government's basically set up to support me in a lot of ways. Now that we talked about women, it might be much even more so for Indigenous people and Māori people. they have good reason not to trust the government, dating back to the theft of iwi land onward. And so when you make these appeals for from officialdom for trust, then it's going to have a different set of priors going on in the background there. Why should I trust an organisation that hasn't served me and hasn't had my best interests at heart? And there's a really interesting parallel, actually, between Māori experience and actually the most popular conspiracy theory in the world, QAnon, at the moment. QAnon posits that a cabal of pedophiles are in charge of the government and they're officially protected and they're carrying on and manipulating us in various ways.
It sounds absurd, right? It sounds, how could anyone believe
that? How could
that?
Anyone believe that? Actually, it's really similar to the Māori experience of state care, where basically Māori children were taken from their homes, often for very spurious reasons in the 60s, 70s, and they were taken into state care where they were sexually abused. And that was known about at high levels of the government and at high levels of various officialdom. Nothing was done. How much of a step is it for someone that's experienced that kind of thing to then believe in a cabal of pedophiles as opposed to someone like me or you?
Do you have a personal interest or experience in this?
I found this story very difficult to do, because how do you say something interesting about conspiracy theories, something that's basically the most covered topic in the world over the last couple of years? And I really struggled with it until I interviewed the psychotherapist Paul Wilson, and he said something about us all being anxious beings in an uncertain universe and trying to make our way. And that really grounded this in a really universal, something that's really universal. Because conspiracy theories, what he was essentially trying to say is that we are all just freaking out about the total meaningless afflictions that befall us all of the time, the random stuff that the universe throws at us. And what conspiracy theories do on a very base level is they provide a sense of certainty, a backbone to the universe. Even if that backbone is horrific, there's absolute, it divides it into absolutes. There's good and there's evil. And that cabal of pedophiles, that whatever, they're evil.
Gives you a structure with which to understand the world.
And that made things click for me a little bit, because I grew up in a very Christian background. I have a lot of experience of religion, and I actually saw real parallels with that, because, I mean, right or wrong, what religion does is it provides that kind of structure. And so there's parallels between what lots of people believe, religion, you know, anything like that. We're looking for certainty in a universe that isn't providing it for us. And we're looking for something that will divide the place into binaries, and that will give us some sort of comfort in our, you know, deeply frightened ape brains. And
in fact, it's ringing a bell. I remember someone explaining to me that institutions don't really exist, but society works based on our belief in them.
Yes.
And these abstract concepts. This is people, non-conspiracy theorists, but, you know, you build your society and your life around these imaginary concepts of whether it's justice or
you have to create
the state.
You have to create structure in order to feel safe, right?
Really interesting. One sort of previous theory about conspiracy theorists is that they started on YouTube and they watched something about the Twin Towers, and then it suggested to them that maybe it wasn't all that it seemed, and then they went down this rabbit hole and that the algorithm turned them into conspiracy theorists. But do you feel like too much stake is put in that?
I think that's absolutely valid, and Mark Zuckerberg and, you know, Google are absolutely culpable in what has happened. The epistemic crisis that has befallen the world, but it is probably the algorithm on its own is less impactful than the fact that it draws people into communities. And this goes back to our beliefs being shaped socially. Hannah McGowan felt accepted in a community when she went into this alternative health community and ended up taking on ideas that are pretty spurious. Yes, the echo chambers, whatever you want to call them, that is the more impactful part of social media, along with the algorithm. We need people to reinforce our beliefs, and we make our beliefs socially in order to be a part of a group.
How do we get people out of conspiracy theories?
I think...
Not by bombarding them with facts.
No, and this has been sort of repeated ad nauseum, but our brains are basically wired for confirmation bias, for winning arguments against our rivals. We don't necessarily respond to facts. In fact, we dismiss them if we think that they go against our priors, what we already believe, essentially. Is that, and even if you know that, you can't avoid it. We're doing it right now. So how do you get people out of conspiracy theories? You know, maybe you can get facts on board, but actually, I talked to a guy that got into the anti-1080 world, and he got out of it thanks to a guy called Gary Coker. And Gary Coker said something really interesting to me. He said that he was having Facebook debates with this guy, was going back and forth, they were insulting each other, and then one day he had an epiphany. He said, I'm going to talk to this guy like a friend. And when he started talking to him like a friend, he started replying to him politely. Then this guy, anti-1080 guy, Mike Hepburn, started responding. That's pretty much the only way that people are going to respond to you. Our beliefs are shaped socially. We don't listen to people unless we trust them. That goes for governments as well, you know. How are you going to, as a government, make an appeal for trust when you haven't treated someone well? You have to actually show that you care about someone in order to change them, in order to turn them around. And ultimately, that the story really concludes that is the most important thing. But actually, getting people to believe the right things is not necessarily the most important thing in the world. Actually, the most important thing, and the thing that's really going to provide comfort ultimately, is I know it sounds cheesy, but compassion. Other people, really, we are not going to find real respite in thinking that we know all the facts, but we are going to find respite when it counts, and someone holding our hand, you know, sharing a beer on the deck and watching the sunset. That's where real comfort happens.
Well, that interview ended unexpectedly tenderly. Thank you, Hayden. Great advice.
Unexpectedly tenderly for me as well.
Particularly for a hardened, cynical media watcher like you.
Soul and me talking about compassion.
Great. Journalist Hayden Janelle, you can read his piece. We've linked to it on our website. Nice to chat to you. Thanks.